Yeah, that was totally the plan for Quinn. That's why Quinn and Arch were on the same team. I wanted Arch to be able to just go play football. He hadn't really played in a year, you know. And I know what Quinn's about. Quinn's had a great spring.
Hello and welcome in. It's Always College Football. We have a busy edition of Always College Football today. It's April 22nd. We're going to look back at the games from this past weekend. Spring games all over the place, including at Texas, where a star might have been born, but he was probably, let's be real, he was probably born a couple of years ago as the recruiting process started with him. The defending national champs, the Michigan Wolverines, were on the field as well. So we'll take a deep dive into what Michigan might look like, maybe a hole or two that they might have in some areas that I am no longer concerned about, including one at wide receiver. Florida State was on the field. We're going to evaluate what DJ Uiagalelei looked like in a Seminole uniform, albeit a different colored Seminole uniform. It was turquoise, and it was pretty, I might add. Might want to kind of maybe force that one in to the regular rotation. I don't care. You put turquoise out there with gold helmet and everything. It was a beautiful sight. And I thought DJ Uiagalelei did a lot of really nice things in his debut as the likely starting quarterback for the Seminoles. The Aggies were on the field. And my goodness, do I have a takeaway for you if you like defensive line play? A lot to consider there. They got a good one brewing down there in College Station. We'll dive into Notre Dame, who I think has a lot to be excited about. We'll dive into Oklahoma, who was on the field this past weekend as well. So a lot of teams that we want to break down. And we've talked for a while now, a couple days, a couple weeks, frankly, about the portal. A couple of guys deciding where they're going to go, and a bunch of guys here in the next week or so that are starting to line up where they're going to take visits to. So you can kind of check out the hand that some of these teams are trying to play, what they're going after, what positions they're prioritizing, and some of the names that might fill those voids on a couple notable rosters like Alabama, LSU, Colorado, and at Auburn. So without much further ado, let's dive into last weekend's spring games right here on Always College Football. We'll start with the Michigan Wolverines, who took to the field in the spring game setting. And I might say, I don't know if you guys took a chance to go and check out the rings, but they actually received four rings for their accomplishments last year. The national championship ring, understandably, but they also received the Big Ten championship ring. No surprise there. The College Football Playoff gives you a ring. That was a good-looking ring as well. And they got the Rose Bowl ring, which I didn't know that that was a separate ring for winning the Rose Bowl en route to a championship, but I like it nonetheless. If you haven't taken a peek at the rings, do so, because they're very, very good looking. They did a good job. The Mason Blue just works on the gold ring, doesn't it? Looks good. So congrats to Michigan on receiving those. Let's dive in what they might do here in 24. We'll start at quarterback. As of this moment, appears like there's a two-man competition right now. Now, it's a little bit tough to get a gauge as to how things are going to fill out when you have a split squad scrimmage and there's no tackling, especially when you're Alex Orji. And a lot of what you do and a lot of what makes you difficult to defend is not going to be on display in a setting where you aren't able to be tackled. But him and Davis Warren, both on the field, and when you take into account what Orji did, 13 of 18, 103, did have the 18-yard touchdown run. Warren, a pretty efficient 6 of 9 for 136 and a couple touchdowns. I thought both had some pretty good moments in the game. Now, the touchdown pass from Warren to Kendrick Bell showed, I thought, a lot in his arm. A couple of short passes too. Seems like he has pretty good feel for where they're going to be. Now, you look at the other two quarterbacks that played in the game, Jaden Davis, probably not there just yet. Jaden Denegal, probably not there just yet. But all things to kind of take into account, I thought Davis Warren actually played quite well. Wasn't sure what to expect from him. Still kind of wondering how this quarterback battle is going to play out. But either way, I think quarterback goes into the summer as a position I'm not going to say of concern for Michigan anymore. I think they're going to be fine at that spot, regardless of what direction they go. At running back, we know Donovan Edwards is the man. Went over 100 yards in the national championship game, has more than 2,300 yards and 18 touchdowns in his career, so it shouldn't come as a huge surprise that that guy's going to be a guy that they rely heavily on. What I was encouraged by, we knew he had speed, we knew he had quickness, we knew he can game break it, or he can break the game open in the open field. What I've been encouraged by is the fact that he can showcase some vision, some strength, running behind his pads. That's an area of development that is clearly starting to take hold for Donovan Edwards as he steps into what's likely to be the star position on this offense. The wide receivers was watching this one as well. And we've talked a little bit. I think Michigan's going to be fine at wide receiver, I might add. I think they're going to be fine. Now, will they be elite? I don't know about that. They weren't elite last year and they won the national championship, but they were very, very good and they were extremely solid. But one thing they did not have is a guy with length. And now, looking at what they've added, and some of the pieces that they have, I think Fred Moore is a guy that has a chance to do some big things this year. Now, he finished with a game-high 81 yards, had just three touches, but at 6'1", he's got some length that is much needed. They lost five scholarship receivers listed at 6 foot or taller last year, and you know also that Fred Moore is a speedy, speedy weapon and showed it off on that 48-yard touchdown there in the fourth quarter. So I also think on the end of round two, he's maybe a guy that they can use as a gadget player from time to time. So he was a guy that jumped out to me in evaluating that position for the Wolverines. The offensive line is still a question mark. And I know that you look at what Michigan's done in the portal the last couple of years. They've won back-to-back Joe Moores. Can I really look at Michigan's offensive line and say, yeah, I'm worried about them? No, I can't do it with any credibility. I mean, they've been really good and they've replaced a lot of really good pieces the last couple of years and they haven't dropped off a bit. But I do think the defensive front won a vast majority, both in run game and in the pass rush, in the matchup on Saturday. Now, it's kind of understandable. As we go through all the spring games over the last few weeks, the defense, in most cases, has gotten better at the offense. But it did feel more notable, considering just how good Michigan's been along the offensive line the last couple of years. So I will be watching that closely, but I feel great. And there are a lot of guys that didn't even play very much, guys that played limited, you know, small amounts of playing time. But those were some of the takeaways for me when evaluating the Michigan Wolverines. The USC Trojans, and an important thing to note, and I think one thing that you always have to remember as it relates to spring games, and USC, I think this holds true. Things are seldom as good as they seem, and they're seldom as bad as they seem. Now, you look at USC's defense, a lot of really good things, a lot of things to be encouraged by. You look at their offense this past weekend, not what you're wanting. So I'm pumped to see the growth on the defensive side. Offensively, I don't want to say I'm concerned, but at the same time, would like to have seen just a little bit more. And the offense really struggled. And quarterbacks had some interceptions. And I think when Lincoln Riley came out after the fact and said that Miller Moss, he would be the starter if the season started tomorrow because of the experience he has in the program, the performance in the Holiday Bowl against Louisville, all of the things are really valuable. But I also think Mayava is a guy to keep an eye on. Now, remember, he just got here, so still getting acclimated with what they're doing, but there were a couple designed runs for him, which is noteworthy. I think you look at Mayava, probably a little bit more of a runner than what Miller Moss is going to be and can be used in that offense as a runner, whether it's as the starter or as a situational player. I think both guys will have a role in this offense, but it wasn't a great day for USC quarterbacks. But I think when I'm looking at it through the lens of a USC fan, with Lincoln Riley at the helm, are you genuinely concerned about the quarterback spot? Because I'm not. I'm just not. I think he's as good of a quarterback developer as we'll find in the sport. So I'm not worried about the quarterback situation. I'm not. SC is going to score points. SC is going to have a capable quarterback, and they're going to have capable weapons on the perimeter. We know that for sure. But what I am not so sure about is just how good the defense was going to be. And if you look at what Danton Lynn did in his time at UCLA, they went from 88th before he arrived to a really good defense, and then a defense that ultimately finished among the tops in the sport as far as rushing yards per game and all the things that they did. They didn't give up a lot of big plays. They, I think, did a tremendous job. So, and D'Anton Lynn has said this too, multiple times over the course of the offseason, is that in the spring, he's going to install just a little bit, you know, their base concepts. You know, here's our base concepts. Here's what we want to be. This is way, way elementary level defense for D'Anton Lynn. So this rabbit hole of defensive calls goes a whole lot deeper, and we didn't see any of that. And I don't think they were exposed to any of that because the emphasis has been assignment sound football and understanding the base principles of what D'Anton Lynn's going to install. So they barely have access to everything that they're going to have access to as the season progresses. And I look at what they had in defensive back in the secondary. I thought they did a lot of good things. Bear Alexander didn't play. I thought there were some positive moments in the front defensively. I thought the defensive back's coverage was excellent. So some of the angles they took were excellent. They're just getting started. And there is actually a quote on record from D'Anton Lynn that when we finish spring, we'll have maybe half of the playbook installed. That's pretty amazing too. And I think that's the right way to approach it. This is a group that has been beaten up, a group that has been questioned, a group that's been doubted, understandably so, but give them confidence, but not overwhelming them with material from the playbook. Allow them to play fast, evaluate your personnel accordingly, and then add to it little by little as they approach the season next year. I was really encouraged by what I saw from the defense. And I'm not going to go as far as to say this is a top 20 defense or a top 25 defense or even a top 30 defense. But if you think SC won't be drastically improved on that side of the ball, I'm going to disagree with you. I think they're going to be a lot better on that side of the ball. And offensively, maybe they'll be a little more complimentary as well. So I'm really encouraged with what I saw from SC and the defense from this past Saturday. But I know there's a lot more in that arsenal of weaponry that D'Anton Lynn has to kind of expose opposing offenses to in the fall. So very excited about the progress being made out there on the West Coast. When we move to the 40 acres in Austin, Texas, there is no quarterback controversy. Okay. I want to start by addressing the elephant in the room. There is no quarterback controversy. This is Quinn Ewers' team. He is entrenched as the starting quarterback. He has proven from 2021 to 2022, had that first year there at Ohio State, got his feet wet. 2022, started to have a bit of a grasp, but didn't play super fast, wasn't elite at that point, but he took massive strides last year. Anticipation, accuracy, all the things that you could want in a development for the quarterback spot has been outstanding for Quinn Ewers, and I expect him to have a big year here in 24. However, if you're going to take a step back, understanding that Quinn Ewers is your guy, let's not try to create some fugazi of quarterback competition. It's not real. It's Quinn's team, but Quinn has missed time in each of the last 2 years. So knowing that Quinn has missed time in each of the last 2 years, having depth at that position in Malik Murphy's absence, and knowing that Malik Murphy has now transferred Duke, knowing that you have guys behind him is massive. And Arch Manning, his performance was amazing. I thought he was amazing. And if you listen to the buzz coming out of spring, they were practicing for about a month, 32 days to be exact. And by all accounts, the progress that he's made is tremendous. And you saw the beginning of that progress start against Texas Tech last year. Got thrust into the game late in the game, not meaningful minutes to the extent where you can really evaluate his progress. But if you look at the numbers, you're not going to be wowed. But if you look at the ball placement in that game, there's a lot to be excited about. In that game too, he showcased some athleticism, running around, creating plays, buying time, scrambling when necessary. Well, we finally got a glimpse in an extended period to evaluate where he's at. Finished the game with an unofficial stat line of 19 to 25 for 355 and 3 touchdowns. And the interception, people will look at the interception, know that that came on the Hail Mary. So it was not really an evaluatable play. Okay. It was an interception. Sure, it goes on the stat line, but it's not one that I'm going to credit with a bad decision or an inaccurate throw. I think this is exactly what you want if you are the Texas Longhorns and you're Steve Sarkisian. You have a guy. You know he's your guy. He's going to be great. He's going to have a big year in Quinn Ewers. But knowing you have depth at that position is something you have to be really excited about. And if you look back at what happened in 2023 across all of college football, only 67 quarterbacks started every game that they were available to play in 2023. So roughly half of college football had to rely on a backup quarterback at some point or another in a starting role. Now, in the event, knock on wood, God forbid, hopefully it doesn't happen, in the event in which Quinn Ewers misses a little time, I don't care if it's a series because he has a cramp, Arch Manning can step right in, and hopefully the offense will not drop off because of the comfort that he displayed this past weekend. This is an advanced offense, an offense that puts a lot on the quarterback position, and Arch seems to be progressing beautifully, which is not just exciting for Longhorn fans, but for all college football fans that are anxious to see what another Manning will do at this level of the sport. Texas A&M, the offense, I thought had a bit of an up and down day in the maroon and white game on Saturday. The maroon team did beat the white team 24-10, but there were some notable plays in this game. The white team went into this one with one arm tied behind their back. Let's be real. They were without arguably the four best wide receivers. All right. Noah Thomas, Jahdae Walker, Moose Muhammad, Jabre Barber. They were without their best offensive lineman in left tackle Trey Zune. They also had only one scholarship tight end in Jaden Platt. Now, Connor Wigman, who is still recovering from the broken bone that he suffered in his left foot against Auburn back in September, which required surgery, the white team was not really able to put their best foot forward, so they only had 128 yards of offense. And almost half that total came on the 61-yard touchdown run from Reuben Owens. Wigman, I didn't think, looked elite. He looked a little uncomfortable, but I watched him play last year. Prior to the injury, he was playing good football, so he's not a guy I'm concerned about. I do know that they have an elite 1-2 punch at running back. Reuben Owens, he's that home run hitter. All right, we know he's got great top-end speed, but Le'Veon Moss is a guy that's clearly a very patient runner, a guy that's really mature, and I think he's got that one-cut ability, and on a wet field too, mind you, he looked pretty good. He was running for contact, and I think that too, those two backs really complement each other, and it should be the focal point of what they're trying to be offensively. As far as wide receiver is concerned, if you look at Noah Thomas, and I looked back at some of our notes from him last year, Noah Thomas was a guy all offseason we were saying, hey, keep an eye out for Noah Thomas. Keep an eye out for Noah Thomas. Well, 2023 was kind of an injury-plagued season. Now it looked like we saw him a little bit more in the slot. He had a play on a jet sweep. He's working the middle of the field. There's some things to like about where he's kind of progressing. He's also got some good length as well and showcased that on the high pointed ball that was thrown to him by Henderson. So I think Noah Thomas, I'm not going to go as far as to project he's going to be the number one guy. He's going to be the top tier dude at wide receiver, but there's a lot to like with his progress, and he might finally be able to, if he could stay healthy, might finally be able to kind of be that go-to guy there along the wide receiver spot for the Yaggies. The offensive line was pretty underwhelming, if I'm going to be completely honest. And knowing that going into this offseason, that's one area that I'm a little concerned about. Now, teams were split, a little difficult to kind of get a good feel and the chemistry and the cohesiveness. So the format is going to impact the offensive line probably as much as anything else. But I am going to be watching that position group very closely throughout the summer, throughout portal season, and then ultimately when we get into the fall. The one thing that I do know that, though, is that Nick Scorton, not a lot of people last year were talking about him in the Big Ten when he was at Purdue. Purdue had somewhat of a disappointing season, but looking at what he did, 10 sacks last year for the Boilermakers, and he absolutely took over the game this past Saturday. And if you look at the personnel back along the defensive front for the Aggies, now depth is going to be something that we'll evaluate. They'll get young in certain spots. But I think Nick Skorton, along with all the other players that'll be rolling in at those positions, you might make a case that A&M's defensive front is as good as anybody in the league. Might make a case. We're not there yet, but based on what I saw this weekend, they have three or four dudes that can take over the game, Skorton being one of them. So I look forward to seeing his progress. I look forward to seeing what the depth looks like at that position as they continue to move forward. Let's go to the Oklahoma Sooners. The red team, made up primarily of offensive players, they brought home the victory over the white team, made up mostly of defensive players, 65-58. All right. Not a score that Brent Venables is going to be real thrilled about. But either way, let's start with Jackson Arnold. I thought he looked pretty good. Now, there are some occasions where I think he can get the ball out just a touch quicker. But when he releases it, you can tell. I mean, he is a very gifted thrower. Now, I thought he was solid. 10 of 20, 233. A couple of deep balls were pretty nice. There's clear that there's a bit of a chemistry building between him and Burks. More on Burks in just a minute. But I think there's a lot of things that you got to feel good about with Jackson Arnold. Now, were there a few throws that he would like to have potentially had back? Sure. He had an overthrow to Burks. He misfired on the throw to Jaden Gibson. A couple instances where I felt like he held it a little bit too long. Sure, there were probably a few plays that he would like to do over. But all intents and purposes, man, he's still a young player. This is his second full spring, first as a full-time starter. He's going to be better when they tee it up in the fall than he was at any point here in April, and even dating back to his time when he started the bowl game. Wide receiver went from being a position that I wanted to watch very closely to like, all right, they got a guy. And Deion Burks appears to be that guy. And he's given me some serious Hollywood Brown vibes. Now, if you're an Oklahoma Sooner fan, that's got to get you fired up because he feels even a little bit bigger than Hollywood Brown. But man, he's got a lot of juice. The first opportunity to step out there in front of the fans in an Oklahoma uniform, you could tell that chemistry between him and Jackson Arnold's legit. Five catches, 174 yards, and two touchdowns. Now, I think it's going to be interesting because he's going to be playing in the slot, and Drake Stoops had held down that position for a long time and was really, really solid. I think Burks has a little more juice, so he can take the top off the defense there in the slot, which is really exciting. And hey, it's going to be tough to replace the productivity that Stoops gave you for the last few years, but man, they were in a really good position with what I think Burks can contribute at a position of need. I think at running back too, there was a big name that I had not really familiarized myself with. That is Kalib Hicks. Major standout, I thought, on Saturday. He's got juice. He looks the part. And he's going to be competing, I think, with Gavin Sawchuk for some of those carries. Now, we know Sawchuk's going to be the guy. We know he's the starter. That's understandable. But when you look at what's behind him, I think Kalib Hicks has a chance to be a really nice change of pace back for the Sooners. The offensive line, I thought the first team offensive line actually did a pretty good job. Now, the offensive line, for the most part, with all the turnover, has been pretty significant question mark. Especially when you had the knee injury sustained by Troy Everett. But I thought the first team offensive line was probably a slightly ahead of schedule compared to where I thought they might be at this point of the offseason. But the defense and the excitement around the defensive front has continued on because OU has managed to sign and brought in a bunch of big-time players. David Stone, some of the development of the guys that have been in the program for the last couple weeks or last couple years. You heard that there's been progress made. They did not disappoint this past weekend. The white team got home for 7 sacks. And I thought the secondary, yeah, they took some lumps, but they were also without some of their best players. Billy Bowman wasn't out there. Woody Washington wasn't out there. So once they get back to full strength, I think they're going to be a lot better when you pair them with the defensive front that looks like they might have some portal additions as well. And this defense at all three levels might ultimately end up being pretty good because we know we feel great about the linebackers there for the Sooners. So I thought, all things considered, a rock solid performance from Oklahoma. Let's go to Florida State. And I liked the way that Mike Norvell kind of set up this scrimmage, by the way. They did some drills at the beginning and they did some special teams drills. I mean, it was really a practice. And who didn't love the non-contact jerseys, the turquoise non-contact jerseys? I don't know how you make turquoise a a color that they wear regularly, but that might be one of the best looking jerseys I think I've ever seen. Florida State uniform and a turquoise jersey, that thing was pretty. So if I were DJ Uiagalelei or any of the quarterbacks or any of the guys that were non-contact, I'd keep that one because that's a good looking lid. That's for sure. DJ Uiagalelei, let's start with him. I was curious, you know, I think a lot of us were real curious. All right, now that DJ Uiagalelei is back in an offense that's going to require him to play fast, would he be able to do that? Because if you think last year at Oregon State, a lot of it was pushing the ball down the field, relying on a big arm, heavy play action, run first type of approach. And that might very well be what Florida State becomes this year as well, because I think they have four dudes at running back that I feel really good about. Lawrence Toafili might be their best pound-for-pound player. Keziah Holmes and Roydell Williams, I thought, had some really bright spots in the game. And then Jalen Lucas can flat-out fly. So they might still be a run-first-oriented attack. And I thought with the absence of Trey Benson, maybe they'd revert a little bit more balance. I think this is a run-first football team. There's no denying that. And I thought DJ Uiagalelei, I don't know if he's lost weight. I didn't hear that documented by EJ Manuel or Pete Thamel or Mike Monaco in the spring game, but he looked like he'd lost some weight. He looked like he's getting the ball out really quickly. I thought the placement on some of the throws was really good. There was a drop or two that was troubling, but man, I thought DJ looked really comfortable. He looked really comfortable and got the ball out quick. The release looked a little bit quicker. I felt pretty good about what I saw from DJ Uiagalelei. So I think this transition from what he ran at Oregon State last year to what he's ultimately going to run at Florida State, I'm encouraged by some of the growth that I've seen at that position. At wide receiver, you got to figure out the pecking order, because I think when you look at the receivers, not super consistent by all accounts this spring, but it sounds like Malik Benson is going to be the most reliable option. He's the transfer from Alabama, and it's clear that he's going to be a guy. You even heard the broadcast crew mention, hey, he's probably been the best guy they've had this year. You know what you're getting with Ja'Kai Douglas in the slot. And there are some unknowns beyond those two. But you got to think second year progression from Hykeem Williams and Jaylen Brown, they're probably going to be in a pretty good spot. You also think beyond that, with Pointier, Duspan, Williamson, they're going to capitalize on some chances, hopefully. But will they be able to get beyond some of the guys that are right in front of them? On the defensive side, Azarrie Thomas, you've heard so much about his playmaking, his consistency. You've heard so much about his growth this spring, and it showed up with some of the coverage that we saw from the third-year corner. I think last year, too, there were a lot of times when he was thrust into the spotlight, and he did a really good job. So he'll be able to take some of the pressure off Ventrell Cypress, and you might very well fast forward. This could be one of the better secondaries in the ACC, assuming Azarrie Thomas continues to grow the way I anticipate him growing. And then that linebacker, I was watching that position group, had some departures at that spot. DJ Lundy hopped in the portal for a minute. He decided to come back. He looked leaner, and he looked like he was able to play a little bit more sideline to sideline. Actually had some good moments in pass coverage as well. He was more the downhill run-stopping thumper. I was encouraged by what I saw from DJ Lundy with what they're asking him to do in this new defense, well, in his new role within this defense. So very encouraged. I thought it was a really good spring scrimmage. I'm very encouraged by what I saw from Florida State this past weekend. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish, the biggest question to me is still the offensive tackles. That's to be expected, but we'll continue to evaluate those guys as we move forward. The quarterbacks, now Riley Leonard, he did not play for the blue and gold game on Saturday as he continues to recover from the ankle surgery, but we got to get a good long look at some of the backups. And I think when you listen to the people that have been covering Notre Dame, they said there are four competent quarterbacks on this roster. I feel even stronger about them declaring that a few weeks ago now, after having watched them in the spring game. A lot of buzz has been around CJ Carr, and you hear, hey, man, I've never seen a freshman throw it quite like that. Now, we didn't get to see all the practices, but I understand kind of what they were talking about. This group collectively at quarterback looks to be really, really solid. At wide receiver, I'm starting to feel a little bit better about that position. Deion Colsey, by all accounts, has had a really good spring. He had a few catches on Saturday against Christian Gray, which is encouraging. Micah Gilbert feels like he has a chance to break out this year. We know Jaden Greathouse is still there, went nuts early in the season, so he might be in a really good spot. Jaden Greathouse, by the way, went nuts last year in the spring game as well. So it looks like Gilbert had a role to maybe carve out here. Had 5 catches and 79 yards on 9 targets and a couple touchdowns. So Gilbert, And maybe not Cam Williams like we had thought. Now, Cam Williams did have the hamstring injury, so we'll evaluate his progress as they continue forward. But I'm starting to think that wide receiver group at Notre Dame is going to be ahead of schedule compared to what I thought. And part of that has to do with the emergence of Eli Raridan. Now, I didn't think that Eli Raridan at tight end was going to be playing as much as he did in the blue gold gate. Now, the last couple of years, he's had some injuries, had ACL injuries in each of the last 2 years. But now, here he is. He's big. He's athletic, and he's going to be productive. 5 catches on 7 targets in the first half for 34 yards, including what was, I thought, a terrific catch on that 21-yard touchdown. So Raridan, he appears poised to step up and take some of the pressure off that receiving core, and they might have a couple of tight ends that are going to be in a great spot to step up and be very effective within this offense. The offensive line, a couple of errant snaps. Sam Pendleton, he's probably going to be a guard, but he was in there at center. Couple of bad ones. Had heard that bad snaps had been a little bit of a plague, if you will, the last couple weeks for Notre Dame. Still evaluating the center spot. The Pendleton will probably slide back out to guard at some point here in the near future. And then on the defensive side, I wanted to watch Jalen Snead. And I think he has a chance to become a major impact player. And look, I know he's got a high ceiling. They've always said that. But he looks like he's poised to step right in and fill a void of some real veterans in Bertrand and Leofau. They're going to be fine at linebacker. I know they're going to be great along the defensive line too. And in pass rush situations, I think Boubacar Traore has a chance to be that obvious passing situation force off the edge. So I was a little worried about, hey, Javonte Jean-Baptiste is gone. Who's going to step up? Traore might be in there. Batello might be in there. I think they have some. Burnham might be in there. They're pretty good on the edges. So I think they're elite in the secondary. I think they're going to be really good at linebacker and the defensive line with Howard Cross, Riley Mills, Traore, and others. I think they're going to be in a pretty good spot as well. So I come out of the spring feeling excellent about Notre Dame. That's about where I went into the spring with them as well. Moving into some transfer portal news. And like I said, this is a snapshot from the time we're taping this segment. This is what's going on. This is the latest. All right. So stick with all these transfer portal moves up to the minute transfer portal news. You can get them on ESPN.com. You can get them on 247. You can get them on 3. You can get them on a bunch of different places. So I encourage all of you guys to stay dialed in to all those different publications that do a great job of covering it on a daily basis. But some big news of the weekend. Colorado has landed Pitt transfer defensive end Deon Hayes. Now, he was one of the top available players in the entire portal. When you look at where they're at, he went to Pitt and did a lot of good things in 2023. Had 44 pressures, had 10 and a half tackles for loss, but felt like he wasn't in a position to win now. So it's kind of ironic that he would go to a place like Colorado coming off of 4-8. But at the same time, I do think this is a good, solid addition for Deion Sanders. To be able to go and get one of the top available defensive line prospects is no easy task, because everybody and their brother is trying to get in on the defensive line, creating depth on the defensive line, especially on the interior. So to go and get a guy with proven credibility at the highest levels there in the ACC is a massive coup. So congrats to Colorado. They have a couple other guys that they've added as well, but Deion Hayes is certainly one of the biggest in the portal available. He'll be a Buffalo moving into next year. Alabama has landed the nation's top kicker from the NCAA transfer portal, Graham Nicholson, who won the Lou Groza Award last year as the nation's best kicker, announced on Sunday night that he would be transferring to Alabama. Ohio State was also in on Nicholson, who's from Cincinnati and was a first-team AP All-American last year. Now, what's significant about this is that Nicholson actually edged Will Reichard, who's heading to the NFL draft and was one of the best kickers in Alabama history and, frankly, SEC history. So to replace a proven commodity with a proven commodity is massive. Nicholson has 1 year of eligibility left, and he's likely going to be, I can't imagine a scenario where he's not the day one starter. So guy's got a Lou Groza Award. He's going to step right in and fill a position of need for Alabama immediately. Down on the Bayou, the spring transfer portal opened for LSU on April 16th. We'll run obviously for a couple weeks. LSU lost 13 scholarship players in the fall window, and they've likely added 7 to count towards this 2024 class. That includes Gio Paez from Wisconsin. They currently are 82 scholarship players, and the staff has really busy week ahead of them. Several high-profile defensive players starting Sunday with Michigan State transfer Simeon Barrow. He entered the portal on April 18th and immediately became one of the top names to follow for those that are in the defensive tackle market. Now, Barrow had 110 tackles, 18.5 tackles for a loss, and 10.5 sacks in his four-year career. And it's the second time in 6 months he's actually been in the portal. The last time happened when Michigan State fired Mel Tucker. CJ West will also be in Baton Rouge at Kent State. He accumulated 110 tackles, 19.5 for a loss, and 7 sacks. And then TCU transfer Demonic Williams is also set for a visit for LSU. He has several visits on the schedule, including Oklahoma, Texas, Colorado, and then ultimately Missouri, Oregon, and like I said, LSU. So a lot of movement potentially going on for LSU, but Brian Kelly's been very outspoken about being aggressive in the portal and pursuing defensive line depth. Auburn, a couple of names in the portal, both on the outgoing and on the incoming. Jay Fair, Auburn's top returning wide receiver, is hitting the portal. He announced that just last weekend. He caught 31 passes for 324 yards and 3 touchdowns last year as the primary slot guy, but it's kind of looking like they're moving in a different direction. It looks like with the addition of Cam Coleman and some of the other guys that have stepped up and the guys that were added in the portal, Jay Fair's role might have been slightly diminished. He opts to jump in the portal, which I don't think is a massive loss for Auburn. I think they've adequately fortified a position of need here heading into this upcoming season. They also added Philip Bleedy. That is the 5th-year senior who started his career at Texas Tech. He appeared in every game over his first 3 seasons and was kind of a rotational player at the defensive tackle spot. But then he went to Indiana and he had a really, really solid campaign. 30 tackles, 4 tackles for loss, starting 12 games. He's the first transfer addition for Auburn since the conclusion of spring practice, but probably won't be the last. There's a bunch of other guys that are likely already going to be making visits or taking a peek at Auburn at several different positions. But they added Gage Keys from Kansas earlier. They added Trill Carter from Texas earlier. So clearly defensive tackle inside, internal part of the defensive line, has been a high priority for Hugh Freeze and his staff. 6'3", 295. He's got some size speed, size agility that should be kind of comparable to that of the guy that he's going to replace. Harris from last year left. Bleedy's going to step right in and should be in a pretty good spot. So he's probably going to be more of a kind of a pass rusher, but he should be able to do a lot, I think, for that defense because he logged 15 quarterback hurries last year while playing 66% of the snaps on the interior. So Bleedy, that's a good addition for Hugh Freeze and his staff defensively. That'll do it for us here at Always College Football. Continue to ask all of you to like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show, whether it's on the podcast platform, Spotify, Apple Podcast. Leave a review, leave a rating, subscribe so you can download the podcast from anywhere and listen to it at your convenience. For those of you that are here with us on the ESPN YouTube channel, we appreciate you as well. Hit that thumbs up button right below and subscribe to the ESPN College Football YouTube channel as well. Continue to encourage all of you guys to continue to follow here. We'll keep you up to speed with some of the decisions that will be going down with the college football transfer portal. And we will evaluate. Now, we're not going to break the news when guys declare where they're heading, but we will break down how it might fit for those teams that are making some additions this time of the year. So for all of us here at Always College Football, for Mark, Jake, Jack, I'm Greg. We hope you have a tremendous day, and remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.